So then, you know, Vince had mentioned the Leprechaun, and I said, that's great. You know, and I smiled, and he said, no, I'm serious. I said, so am I.
Take a swing at the king of the ring. Byron brawler, leave your fucking arm in a sling. You can stay rocking jewels, I be rocking your chin. Get the antiseptic out, cause the jab's gonna sting. I'm the reason that most rappers rhyme and show. Got no watch on, I'm going for a timeless look. Cause I'm a beer drinker, I down a one man. There's three things you'll never see me with: cuts, bruises, or a suntan. The one man, Ricky Crew.
Finn, the hero of light. The man who, with great wisdom that he got from a salmon, and great skill that he learned in other ways, triumphed over evil. Balor, the king of the Fomorians, with the evil eye that could poison all who came against him and make a group of up to 10,000 lads lose fights with only one guy or something. Finn Balor. That was terrible.
Let's just keep going. The salmon part in particular, I enjoyed.
My favorite bit was "or something."
Yeah, well, I spent a lot of last night. Sorry, this is Jumping Nothing. My name is Carl. I'm here with Michael.
How's it going?
And Carl.
Hey.
And spent a lot of last night sitting up reading the UCC.ie Celt archives for references to Finn McCool and the King Balor of the Fomorians.
God damn.
Trying to come up with something cool to say. But the problem with Irish mythology is these dudes don't do things that, like, it doesn't make logical sense, the stories that happen. Like, the main reference to Balor is this one battle where he has to get lads to get a stick and open his evil eye for him so that it can poison people, but then something goes wrong and his eye turns on his own men. And that wouldn't have made the point, whatever the point we were trying to make it was, which is, we're going to do a podcast about Finn Balor because he's the new NXT champion.
Yeah.
There's no podcasts in Irish mythology either. I mean, we're the first, assuming that we're part of mythology.
Yeah, that's...
What? Weird. I don't understand that at all.
We're mythological Irish people.
Oh, I guess so.
Pixie red beards and shit.
Yeah. Well, here's what we are. We're recording this in the evening after work rather than a Saturday afternoon. And we are a group of tired, sweaty men.
I'm not tired, but I am sweaty.
You're very sweaty, Carl.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm definitely way more tired than sweaty.
Like, yeah, you're a bit sweaty, though. Sweaty. I'm looking at you.
Thanks. I think we make too much play out of how tired and hungover we are normally to the listeners.
Yeah.
What they want to hear is we're dead on it. We went to bed early. We read the UCC.ie Celt archives to find some good information. And we're here to unleash stuff.
The main piece of research that all of us did was watch Beast in the East.
Yes.
Which is a dumb name for an event.
Yeah.
But
I didn't even watch all of it. I just skipped right to the Finn Balor match. Here's the deal. That was the first WWE I've watched since WrestleMania. And, like, boy, was it a surreal experience seeing Virgil Devitt and Kevin Steen wrestle for a title and having Michael Cole just ruin it. Ruin both of them forever.
Same. Finn Balor used to go climb Mount Fuji by day and camp out overnight looking at the sunrise, dreaming of becoming the champion.
Yeah.
There's no way that happened.
And saying that he used to do it is like, oh, you know, he'd do it 3 days a week. Yeah. Just climb Mount Fuji, look out at the sunrise.
He used to live in Bray when he wasn't wrestling. Like, he wasn't just contemplatively staring at the sun rising over the world's biggest urban agglomeration.
Yeah, he's down in, like, a CrossFit warehouse in Bray. Yeah. That's what he's doing. It's not, like, romantically waltzing up Mount Fuji.
So yeah, we should explain to people that this is the podcast you want to listen to about Prince Devitt / Finn Balor. Because, firstly, we're all Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the gentle tone and cynicism and self-effacing manner that could help to understand Finn Balor's version of that. Secondly, Michael used to watch Japanese wrestling sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I still do. Kind of, yeah, a little bit. I'm going to watch all the G1 climax. Or I'll do what I usually do, which is watch it until I tire of it. About 8 or 9 days in, and just skip to the end.
So that's expertise. And Cahill, Cahill is actually from Bray, County Wicklow, Ireland. So the same water from the Poolafuga Dam courses through his veins.
Yeah, you'll notice the same accent, same reserved tone.
Do you say definitely? Lego.
I don't say definitely, no. Maybe I should.
Well, is there a distinguishing Bray accent?
Yeah, my own.
What?
Anyway, I first discovered Prince Devitt, as he was then, through people tweeting about him on my normal Twitter feed, not my weird wrestling Twitter feed that we use sometimes. No shots, because that's all of you. People were just mentioning this guy, and it's like, oh, he's over in Japan. He's from Bray, and he's got his abs are amazing, and he stamps people and stuff. So I go onto YouTube, I saw him wrestle like Loki, I think, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And that would have happened.
Like, immediately pulling for him, just because, like, Sheamus is massive. And he's got all his hair and stuff, but this guy just looks like this intense dude, relatively normal dude, plus the exotic appeal of a guy who just skipped America and went to Japan and he became really famous in Japan. So how did you first come across him?
Yeah, I mean, I first encountered him, like, he used to mostly be in the kind of junior heavyweight, like, tag division. And so he'd just be wrestling a bunch of matches, which were constant sort of leaping and stomping and running around. And initially I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. It's like a New Japan junior heavyweight who's from Ireland. But the weird thing, like the appeal of Prince Devitt is he's a guy that doesn't talk much. Like, he's a very soft-spoken guy, doesn't do much. Not one of the flashy New Japan characters. Came up when New Japan was starting to get flashier. But you gradually kind of discovered that this guy had all these sort of weird non-verbal elements of his character that he was trying to get out. And you suddenly sort of kind of discovered, here's this guy that isn't just going out. He isn't just like an athletic man who fell into wrestling, who's over there doing squats and occasionally wrestling matches. He's some sort of weird pro wrestling, just some strange understated pro wrestling artist of some kind. And that gradually came out as he made the transition in New Japan from being the guy that does the bunch of flips in the tag match with no tags to wrestling fast-paced junior heavyweight matches, but with a little more like flair and a little bit more kind of nonsense about his entrances. And so, and he's like a very interesting figure. Like, he's a guy, you know, I don't know. I appreciate his mentality for wrestling, and that started to really come across in New Japan. And he stood out in his own right, not just due to my weird nationalist loyalty.
Did you seek him out, or were you just watching sort of the Super Juniors?
I was just watching occasionally somebody would post an entire New Japan show on YouTube,
yeah. And
that's how I kind of first got into New Japan 5 or 6 years ago. Maybe a bit more than that now, but. And then he would just sort of passively be there. This is the Irish guy. Isn't that kind of cool?
Dang.
Bray, that's a bit weird.
So, Cahill, how did you first come across Prince Devitt?
I wish I had a really cool story about he was like in the toilets of our secondary school beating the shit out of someone and doing like flippy stuff on them off the toilets. But no, it was at a wrestling show. He's 8 years older than me, so I wouldn't have met him in school. But
you were in the same school as him?
Yeah, same skills, but like I wouldn't have contemporarily been in that school. Just ascended to fill a 8-year-old place of Devitt. It was in Wolfstown Community Centre in Bray, which no one knows, but I'll tell you about. Shout out to Wolfstown Youths, good soccer team back in the day. Don't know if they still exist. We're blue. All the good lads play for Wolfstown. Anyway. Wolfstown is this kind of bit of Bray that's relatively well known for being very slightly rough, but not that rough. But the community centre was kind of where, I don't know, you would have your birthday party because there was an indoor soccer bit.
Uh-huh.
And it was nice, like a little community hall. And there's a kitchen above. You could watch from the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Nice little place. And then every so often they'd wheel out these wrestling shows, which were like so two bits of gander. Like, oh, here's some wrestling. No one has a clue what this is. Oh, look, there's some big-ish chaps, but mostly it was actually young lads and then a couple of foreign people. No one big foreign, but like, I think
Kenta Kobashi wasn't showing up at the Wolf Tongue Community Center, for example.
I have a weird feeling that I saw like a really young Rampage Brown or something. So I think he... You don't know who that is?
Rampage Brown, never.
Okay. Anyway, so I think the main event at this event that I saw Devitt at was Paul Tracy, now the Lord of the Manor, Paul Tracy, and some other guy who I think was English and I think was Rampage Brown, but I'm not really sure. And that didn't matter because about 40 minutes before that we saw Fergal Devitt in a triple threat match with, I think, Paddy Morrow and someone else. And it wasn't just good because Devitt was in it. What, all of them were actually good. And it was loads of flippy shit. It was way before Japan. And the thing that stood out to me the most was Devitt. It was a ladder match, I think, or it involved ladders.
What? Yeah, the ladder match in the Wolf Tongue Community.
These are some like really hungry young lads. Like
Jesus Christ.
So Devitt cracks his head off the pointy corner bit. Like, this isn't like a trick ladder. Pointy corner bit, and just takes a chunk out of the back of his head.
Jeez.
And I'd love to say that like he probably could put his hand on the back of that back of his head and feel that scar, but he's probably got dozens and dozens of similar scars. So this moment may not have been as special to him as it was to me, but retrospectively, it was very important. I don't know how old he was. Probably like, how old is he? 8 years older than me. So I would have been like 7 or 8 or something.
What?
What? Because he was like
seven or eight. Late,
he was like it was. I don't know. I imagine he was like 18 or something. Oh, I would have been 10.
Yeah, he would have been 10. Yeah. Wow, really that young?
He was really young. He was lean. He was skinny, but he was still like pretty muscular. He was on the way up.
And you remember that this dude exists. Like, this isn't just back.
No, this is, continuity. Yeah. You remember it exists. And there was lads training in Bray because they had this, like, they had Irish.
The Fight Factory. And yeah,
this kind of stuff. So there were a couple of lads training in Bray that I wasn't, like, friends with. Wasn't not friends with them, no shots again. But they would always then talk about Devitt. You'd hear the odd bit about Devitt, or he's back for a while, or he's gone to England to do a bit, or then eventually went to Japan. We're like, oh shit, I went to Japan, cool. And no one else, or most people, then ceased to care. But obviously I still like wrestling, so I keep up with Devitt news. Not enough to actually watch Japanese wrestling, but... like, I did eventually, but at that time, it's just like, no, Devitt's fine, check a message for it, yeah, win something.
Yeah, it pleased you that other people were watching Japanese wrestling.
Yeah.
And giving them the kind of 2 thumbs up.
Yeah, so then eventually, could years later, take Bray cred by putting over Devitt and go, oh, he's really good, he's big in Japan, when I did get into watching the bits of Japanese wrestling. And then saying, oh, we should go to WWE, because then we all get to watch him on TV every week. That would be great, his friends would like that. And now... being able to sit and gloat about it.
Yeah.
However, still being kind of scared of him if I see him in Bray, because I didn't know him personally as a kid, whereas lots of people I know would have known him or his brothers. So I still cower a little. Kind of a bit of fascination with him.
Yeah. Carl, you said we discussed Prince Devitt before, back in the old days.
Yeah.
Jumping Nothing season 1. And you just said, that you had like a Roy Keane-like obsession with him.
It's like, it's slightly different now that he's like on NXT and he's in our universe now, the WWE universe, so to speak. But he's sort of in our cultural sphere now. Whereas when he was in Japan, especially that rise, where he kind of was biting at the heels of the heavyweights, yeah, it was like a Roy Keane thing. Like in my chest, I got a flutter and I was like, this dude is the fucking king for like really elemental reasons that I can't fully express. But that could, like your Daniel Bryan argument that he's not over because of Yesinger having a beard, but just because of his incredible comebacks. Like, if you surgically, how is he so good at wrestling?
How is he so good at looking athletic despite being from Bray? Like,
that's
hold on. Well, sorry, no, I'm not singling out Bray.
He carries tires while crawling like a cat.
Yeah.
That's literally true.
Yeah. Or what I mean to say, sorry, any Bray people, didn't mean to single you guys out. What I mean to say is he comes from where we come from. Yeah, he looks like some sort of fucking like god man. That doesn't make sense to me.
There's various like physical things, like he's genetically gifted at looking well and being fit and stuff, puts in tons of work, doesn't do anything bad, like drinks tea and does Lego. And like,
yeah, the Lego thing.
Yeah, he's a relatively quiet guy. Likes wrestling. He was good at sports growing up. He's naturally like coordinated and athletic. He's just kind of got various things. And if he was to be a big loudmouth dick, he'd probably be even bigger than he is.
Do we buy this thing that he's like sort of from the RTE documentary that was on Irish TV called Smack 'Em Up that you can watch, which follows him in sort of the UK and then his last tour in New Japan, or the WWE documentary, which is a sort of cut-rate version of that with more Prince Albert in it? They put over this idea that he is completely without ego. He's humble and has no interest in stardom or celebrity. So he goes through sort of 6 years in Ireland and England, opens his own school, which creates Becky Lynch, amongst other great joys and stuff. Then he goes to Japan and they say, look, you can clean our jock straps and we'll teach you how to work. And he doesn't say, well, I can already fucking work. He says, brilliant. And he learns how to work again. And then he gets to the top in Japan, and then he moves to America and they say, clean our jock straps and we'll teach you how to work. And he doesn't say no. He says, yeah, I'll do it. So is it this idea that he's like this totally normal guy who really, really just loves the in-ring bit? Is that...
Yeah, I buy it. I don't know if I'm being lied to, but I buy it. Like, you know, the way, if you see any shoot interview with like Kevin Nash or any of these people, when it comes to, they're just constantly, oh, and everyone on the bus was smoking weed, except for Triple H, of course. He never did any drugs.
Yeah,
like that's bollocks. At some point they sent the memo around saying, if you're talking about all the fucked up shit you did, just mention that Triple H was off being responsible somewhere. All right, anyone really? Taking part? Yeah, it's total shit. It's absolute bullshit. But the fact that they're always on script about it is just ludicrous. But there's never a point where like Prince David, like between what he does on Twitter, which is a very high standard Twitter guy.
Yeah.
And all the anecdotes about him from people that have spoken about working with Prince David, and like seeing guys like he wrestled a match against Noam Dar, young UK wrestler, and then Noam Dar is like a big fucking Prince David fanboy on Twitter. He's like, this guy was just like, he's just like a nice man. What a nice man this guy was. I'd like to wrestle him again because he was so nice. Everyone seems quite organically repeating the fact that this is just, he's just a nice fucking guy who likes wrestling, goes out, does a lot of wrestling, does his best, goes home, watches the news.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pays his bills on time.
Some Lego. Okay, well, talk us through, if you can, what a quintessential Japanese Fergal Devitt match looked like.
Well, there's a couple of phases. So, in the early days, pretty kind of, he was doing what the Super Juniors, in particular the Tag Division Super Juniors, were meant to be doing, which is opening the show and jumping around, but doing it in a really stiff kind of way. There are some great matches where there's one where Kenny Omega was involved that I was like, this is going too fast. Like, not in a situation where it's just constantly people doing moonsaults and there's just like, it's your turn to do a moonsault. It was just constant sequences, pinfall, up, somebody breaks it up by leaping on them, and then they're into it. It's just very fast, organic, back and forth tag wrestling. No, nobody paying attention to the tags. Bit of a sore spot for me, I grant you. But, so there was that phase with Prince Devitt. Then there was the kind of middle phase where he's trying to develop more of the character, and he's into the singles division now, and it's not just him coming out chewing gum and jumping around. He starts turning to the crowd and either swearing in a positive way or a negative way, and coming out in space suits when he was in Apollo, whatever it was, 55. And it's a weird middle period where he knows he wants to do something, he knows he wants to stand out and for his character to represent something, but he's not quite sure what it is other than being a slightly bigger weirdo than the other sort of junior heavyweights who are just coming out looking serious and doing flips.
Yeah.
And it's very, very confusing. And then he settles on this sort of last Bullet Club period where he's like, I'm coming out on whatever Bad Luck Fale's shoulders.
Yeah.
And wearing a cool jacket and being mean and swearing in a very sincerely negative way.
I think he kind of enjoyed that as well. So yeah. Kind of on the point of him being like totally respectful and wholesome and good, he probably is, and he seems to be, and there's nothing to say that he isn't 99% that. But there's 1% of him that probably makes a smart comment when he's hanging around with like the rest of the Bullet Club guys. Yeah.
Yeah,
there like he has to be like there about. Oh, we fucked 10 girls last night. And we drank like 5 billion beers, and then we did like loads of lines of coke or whatever the hell they all do with themselves. And then they go, "Oh, Devin was out with you," and you go, "Yeah, like he didn't do anything, but he made this really like smart comment or something." And you go, "Oh yeah, he's a bit of a bad. Oh, he slagged someone off a bit." And then he said, "No, don't want to be bad lads." You go, "No, you were a little bit bad just for a second."
Yeah, I've said it to you before, Carl. I loved how quaint his bad guy like patter with the audience was. Again, my favourite line in the world is him turning to the audience for no reason saying, "I don't give a fuck. Not a single fuck." I don't know why it made me laugh so much.
He still does like two sweet things with people, and you're kind of going, any guy that still gets off on that or does that is like relatively mild. And like, was really into the attitude here. I mean, mild in a great way. Like, I'm a relatively mild character. Thanks, Michael, for agreeing so heartily with that one.
Yeah, no, I need spit coffee.
He's the kind of guy I'd quite like to hang out with.
Yeah,
make some Lego.
The like, fourth time I've mentioned this on our 17-hour run of podcasts, but I still really, really enjoy at the end of this Colt Cabana interview where Colt is like, "Oh, you've got a Twitter now," and he says, "Yeah, like recently I've been talking a bit of a smack about people on there." And the relish which he says, like, "Yeah, I've been atting Kota Ibushi, calling him a little cunt." And then all the replies are like primarily Japanese, and then just like, "You bad man, David," and the absolute relish. And he'd be like smashing up an action figure and post a picture of that and be like, "This is you, Okada."
It's just, yeah.
it was just beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, it was so. There's just There's a weird. It's strange to say it because the guy is clearly an incredibly ripped, like dangerous looking adult man, but there's something so childish about all his like there's something so gleeful about all his heel stuff, and like he's kind of he's an understated character in wrestling. But
when we saw it, we've talked about it loads of times before, and you guys talked about it before I was here, him against Ricochet when we saw them at a Rev Pro show last year, and it was like definitely one of the best matches I've ever seen, and probably pretty good in a lot of people's estimations, internet famous. They're two like super understated guys that aren't famous for talking or anything other than wrestling. Like they're kind of pretty mild even in their characters, whereas David's kind of gone on a little bit more than Ricochet and actually has a bit of like, I don't know, a little bit more personality about him.
Is this just me, or is David still terrible at promos? Like,
yeah.
It might just be because he's a chap from Bray, and that might come off as this fizzing intensity to an American, but to me it's just this fella being like, Steen or Kevin Owens, you know, definitely a great wrestler, but I'm going to destroy him tonight. And it just reminds me of like when you do like a school play or something and somebody read their lines.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like the whole everything about David screams, "I know I can't cut promos."
Yeah.
Like the
it's handy that he's not in Ireland doing them, because like then he'd just be anyone else.
Yeah,
but I think abroad it works.
Yeah, but he's fine. He came out. He does the like the demon thing.
Yeah,
now, the body paint stuff. Like even one of the things I really loved about Prince David is how he tapered off his New Japan run, starting what he would eventually do in NXT. Like he's one of these guys that clearly has his own internal continuity in his head about what his character is doing. And
he told the RTE documentary that he has a lot of short-term goals and not many long-term goals, which I thought was quite an interesting perspective on being a wrestler. So it's like you're neither that kid who comes in with the gimmick already when they're 15 and trains and thinks they're going to get famous as like Danny Lightning or whatever, but you're also not, it's not all focused on the end goal, it's focused on being the best in the next step all of the time. So he's like, body paint will do me, it'll give me something to go to, it'll like show that there's a difference between this meek nice guy and this fucking monster. So that stuff is good. Like, everything is like aggressively sensical, like while it's sometimes weird, like everything works. Yeah. Can you think of a mistake that he's made apart from like dropkick botches, which happen occasionally?
Match mistakes?
No, like a character mistake, or like, I don't know if we're qualified to call a moveset mistake, but like,
I think there was a phase of NXT where it probably wasn't his fault. It was like, you told you're having a 10-minute match against someone you've wrestled a good few times in a row, like where, and he's also still he was still getting over this character and this moveset, where you could kind of go, if I was a more cynical man, I'd say you're just trying to get in your 5 moves of doom. But you know, that's WWE's game though.
You have to do
it. It might have been a 6 or 7 minute match, in which case, like, you have a momentum change and a couple of moves, and that's it. But that's not even a mistake. It's hard to fault. Even on the promo-y thing, I think it probably does come off as fizzing intensity, that he's kind of soft spoken and serious and straight shooting. It's like Becky Lynch probably works, even though to us, when Becky's going super intense and dramatic, we're kind of going, oh, okay, that's a bit over the top. Like, do people ever, say English people, do they ever say to you that, oh, you're kind of funny, or your voice has a bit of a lyrical quality? And you go, no, this is just like what I am, but they're like, they don't know you. So they're just going, oh, I've ascribed all these things to you because you've got a different accent, like, which is probably a bit fair.
I thought some of the Finn Balor stuff, I was like, afraid when it first happened, because I thought it might end up being really, really hammy. But again, it does make a lot of sense, because it covers for the fact that he can be just quite quiet sometimes, and it gives him an outlet to be really outrageous the rest of the time, and it builds in a WWE safe wrestling logic for that, where he goes to that place.
Let me ask you guys, because like I said, I haven't watched any WWE since WrestleMania. Like, what is Finn Balor? Like, what's his... Because if he's doing these promos where he's just saying, yeah, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to wrestle him, I'm going to win the match, and then he's also coming out as a demon man, is he not kayfabe a demon person?
No, he is. He's going to that place. Like, yeah, the way Randy Orton goes to that place.
Yeah, it's the dark side. So it's like in his... At the end of him in New Japan, where it's like the prince has risen or whatever he's saying, prince is dead, when he just suddenly became a fucking zombie. And you're like, whoa, are you a zombie or are you real? It's like, no, I'm still the prince, but like, this is fucked up me.
And it's okay.
I can get behind that.
It's not really the Venom transformer. Like, I think it's still kayfabe war paint, or like going to that really negative side of yourself. He's not actually becoming a monster, which is possible to do in kayfabe.
Yeah, do you think that'll last? Like, as soon as Vince McMahon is booking him, will they be like, you know, he's going to shoot fire out of his eyes?
You do worry that there would be some kind of... I don't know. I'd love to see him wrestle Bray Wyatt, but also if that was a lengthy storyline in WWE, I don't want to see it. Yeah. Because...
Do you remember that when he like summoned, in Final Fantasy terms, a small child to intimidate John Cena?
Yeah.
Like, Finn Balor's going to be doing that.
Yeah.
That was your... original call as well, because we had this argument and I was kind of saying, like, for the purposes of this guy's cousins, he has to go to WWE for the purposes of proving to himself and others that he could have done it in WWE. He has to go to WWE, and you very selfishly said that he shouldn't go anywhere near WWE because they will ruin him and be the end of it.
Yeah, I'm glad NXT is there now. It's like a kind of a brief sort of way station where people can go unruined for a while, but like, that's still in prospect, that he will, like, he's enough of a weird character. Vince McMahon won't understand he's a soft-spoken guy ordinarily, but at the pay-per-views, puts on the war paint, he goes to a new... He won't understand what that is. He'll be like, oh, is he a vampire or isn't he?
Yeah, because like, you have to book him as the quiet sort of semi-shoot. You have to book him as Benoit and then let him overleap that at the pay-per-views rather than booking him as the magical demon.
Yeah.
Which will just get tiring. But I don't. I think it's NXT isn't ruining people at the moment because the top guy, like Kevin Owens' gimmick is being Kevin Steen.
Yeah, exactly.
And
Prince Devitt came in with his body paint thing. That's just his.
Yeah. It even said Prince Devitt on the Titantron when he debuted, and then they changed his name.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, can we just talk quickly about seeing Kevin Steen in that moment? Because again, you guys have been seeing Kevin Steen a lot.
Yeah, a bit.
I'm not the kind of guy who watches 3 hours of wrestling every week. Like,
yeah, I guess so. But like, goddamn, it's like I love Kevin Steen's spiel. He's a fat man that squashes you.
Yeah,
he has seated sentons and flips and like, oh god, I can't feel
like Ben comes back off the ropes, puts in the sleeper, and says, "I don't care. I hate your stupid country and everybody in it anyway." Because they're not, like, because of the really point by point, even the crowd in the Beast from the East or whatever were popping more than the New Japan crowd would, but it's very point based. Like, something happens and they boo. There isn't this din underneath it the whole time. So, because he wasn't getting that, he was just like,
there were even,
fuck you anyway.
There were, like, I watched that whole event and there were, like, laughs when someone fell from the top rope onto the, you know, groin onto the top rope.
Yeah.
There was, like, it was proper, if someone did anything heelish, everyone would just go, boo. And someone does something great, like kind of Neville turns to the crowd and puts up his arm, they all go, yeah, and start applauding wildly. It was really cool. It's so weird.
I did love the huge pop for, or the huge, like, heel heat immediately for Steen throwing away the bouquet they gave him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
That bouquet thing. Do they do that in reverse? I'm pretty sure the thing is in Japan is you don't get handed flowers at the start of the match. The new champions get flowers if they win the match. Isn't that it?
I don't know. And it lacked the posing for the photographers as well. So yeah, the whole thing was just a sham.
Who would have thought that WWE would have got it culturally wrong?
Yeah.
Let's stick to food. Right, he returns to Japan. They built this up with a 3-part NXT like montage documentary of his life that like he's gonna go back to Japan and they're gonna pop, and it could have gone wrong. Like, maybe there's a really loyal New Japan crowd that wouldn't have come out for him, but they did. They liked him. So he's the king of Japan. From a Western perspective, this man conquered Japan. He went back, he proved he's still the king of Japan.
If Kenta was not injured, is that storyline completely reassessed? Kenta wins in Japan.
That's actually a really good point.
Because Kenta was getting like vague pushes, not as much as Devitt, but Devitt was probably, he had this gimmick development on his side, which Kenta didn't.
Yeah.
And then there was an injury, I think like a month and a half ago or something.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 months ago.
Kenta screwed completely done.
Yeah.
Like Prince Devitt, if Prince Devitt didn't have the body paint, he'd be Evan Bourne.
Yeah.
Kenta is a you know the way Vince McMahon like legit doesn't know the difference between Japan and China. Like when he did that interview with Steve Austin, he was saying, yeah, no, my son Shane's working in Japan. He's been working in China. I know what Shane McMahon's company is. He's been working in China for like 10 years.
For like digital TV or something.
Yeah. How many times must like Shane McMahon have sent a text message to Vince McMahon going, no, I can't make it to the barbecue, I'm going to be in Beijing or whatever. Like,
Vince,
it must have come up, I will be in China for that day. I'll call you from China. But no. He still says Japan. And Dave Meltzer always says they think Mexico and Puerto Rico are the same place.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, what hope does a Japanese, what hope does like an Asian professional wrestler have in this company?
The same hope as that guy who Styles broke his neck. What was his name?
Oh, Yoshitatsu.
Yoshitatsu. I always forget his name.
But you clearly can't run Hideo Itami the way they ran Yoshitatsu.
Like, no, yeah, of course not.
His whole thing is that he breaks people's ribs by kicking them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's his gimmick. And
sucks that Daniel Bryan already did that gimmick.
Yeah. isn't it so sad that they cut to Hideo Itami sitting on a seat in the fucking sumo hall?
Yeah.
And then they go, this is because he got beaten up in the car park like a month and a half ago. He's just sitting here watching his countrymen cheer this fucking gaijin.
I like how Michael Cole spelled it out as well. They cut to him and he goes, and there's Hideo Itami, who is Japanese. God, yeah.
Anybody suggesting that it's not going to do well for reasons other than the booking?
I think they'll all do well now in the main roster, because one of the things that company has done really well is integrate their top tier of NXT guys into their main programming and creating a bit of buzz about them, and that's something that they've done. Like, that's a piece of actually strong booking, like Steam smart is booking.
One of the top five guys already. And he hasn't technically gone up yet.
Yeah. Kevin Steen. Like, the other thing is, actually, here's a weirder side. You know what I'm kind of sad about? Is, like, if Samoa Joe had signed to WWE in 2005, 2006, 2007, like, holy shit, people would be just losing it. They'd be like, fuck, Samoa Joe is coming to WWE, one of arguably the best that there is. Because TNA like ruins everything it touches, there's no hype for Samoa Joe at all, and he's coming into a situation where people are like, oh, Samoa Joe versus Devin, Samoa Joe versus Kevin Steen, two generations of cantankerous fat guy wrestlers.
Yeah, one of the best things about like 90s wrestling was if you got a genuine surprise, like Chris Jericho is the classic example. Someone showing up on live international television and like coming in and fucking shit up, and it was like really amazing. We absolutely, like, that's what WWE now guards against, because there's no similar level competition. And even if someone like Samoa Joe or Kevin Steen coming from the best of the competition is to come in, and like Michael Kulsh is supposed to be a wrestling fan, so he should be sitting there going, oh my god, it's Kevin Steen, he's running in on John Cena. And like, that should be their debut. But now they go through a year in NXT. Devitt's coming up to nearly a year in NXT.
Yeah, and like last night, I was also observing this on Twitter, not on the television. But during Raw, the Open Challenge is still going, and it's almost ruined, because people are like, oh, Steen's outside the ring, hope Devitt takes the Open Challenge. And people have already got in their head, like, this is how NXT guys debut. This is the three guys who are, like, standing on the side of the court ready to come on, or whatever.
Yeah,
so
now,
it'll never be a real surprise.
Now the only Michael Cole reaction we get for a new guy is, oh my god, from NXT! company that you own, that is based in Florida with all your other wrestlers, and I see them every day on Instagram being friends.
They really could have put Joe straight into the main roster, couldn't they?
But they can't put anyone straight in now, because if you can't put in Devitt, if you can't put in Steen, you can't put in anyone. There's no one bigger than those indie-wise.
So is that
even Samoa Joe?
Is that how Devitt projects as debuting then? Like, because it was gonna be Sami Zayn doing what Steen ended up doing, but then he separated his shoulder. So then Steen came up and did it. And then, obviously, maybe they would have wrestled against each other. Are they just going to replay that, but with Balor is going to come up?
I think so.
Wrestle Cena and Steen in a three-way, and then Cena will step away and they'll finish it off.
Yeah, I think Zayn will come back and go straight to the main roster. Like, I don't have any major reasoning for that, because WWE is not the most logic-bound place in the world, but that's just because Zayn has had no upper hand in that Steen thing ever. So I say Owens wins the US strap, and then Zayn comes back at some stage.
But does Balor debut off Cena?
He doesn't. He sits in NXT for ages now.
The rumor is that he's penciled in for... Ian tweeted at us to inform us that the rumor is that he's penciled in for Cena at WrestleMania.
That would be so soon. Like, I would... I would be absolutely shocked at that. Like, how do you even manufacture a feud between those two? Like, what does Cena say?
What does he have to say?
He's like, accepting open challenges 52 nights a year. Like,
yeah, so no, they can have a match, but like, how do you make a build for a WrestleMania style payoff match? Like, Balor, you're so disrespectful the way you bring up mythology, or like, I don't get it. I can't imagine it unless they change.
It's the opposite. It's the other thing. It's the other feud Cena has, which is, Balor, I respect you a lot, and because I respect you so much, we should have a match.
Yeah.
And see who wins.
How does Cena then win the title again and become the new Ric Flair?
I think Cena's nearly done in terms of that stuff. He'll have one or two runs. He'll be the guy who you put the strap on to get it from A to B.
Yeah.
But I think at this point, he's doing what people like violently rioted for him to do.
Mm.
He's building people week on week.
But he's like, there was one of the, I think that Meltzer had in one of the newsletters, like, it's an interesting place Cena's in, because literally every guy that's been on the top, Vince McMahon has tried to shuffle into the role Cena's now in. It's the first time he's managed it, which is, he's the former top guy who's now some sort of like veteran babyface, like you said, ferrying the title from one person to the other or whatever it is. But every time he's tried to do that, there's always been competition there. So he tries to nudge Hogan out of the way for Ultimate Warrior. And Hogan fucks him and threatens to leave and does movies and blah, 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 blah. Does it with Bret Hart, and there's all kinds of shit going on there. Does it with Steve Austin, and Steve Austin leaves, and you know.
Yeah.
It's one of the weird things, because there's no competition anymore. These idiotic sort of hang-ups that Vince McMahon has. This guy, we should do an episode on just the dark psychological, maybe we already have done one, just the strange psychological landscape of Vince McMahon's creative mind.
Didn't we do one called Vince McMahon's has a rotted syphilitic brain or something?
Oh, we might have done, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, we did make that. We did make that allegation, whether it was a whole episode about
We've covered that.
So, fantasy book, Balor, his first months in WWE.
Okay, Finn Balor comes out.
Where?
A wrestling ring anywhere. He goes, comes into
anywhere.
Just Raw. Comes out, shows up on Raw. He's wearing a tracksuit, got a bag with him. He says, "Thank you so much for my time here at WWE. I'm leaving now. I'm going to go to New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I'm going to do the last 2.5 years of booking again, except instead of AJ Styles, I'll be there. And then I'll have the IWGP title in the York Hall shows that we went to 6 months ago or whatever." I've got a bit lost in the timeline there, but something along those lines is what I'd like to see.
Okay, so here is a credible fantasy booking of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Steam, being a monstrous powerhouse who's really hot at the moment, who they can't waste, should at some point, maybe a month from now, have the return match with Balor and lose to Balor. Balor keeps the NXT title. But then, at SummerSlam, he should beat Cena for the US title and have that for a while. He should monster someone like Kofi or whatever, Wade Barrett or something, just kill someone. Miz, maybe. Then,
no, Kofi, please.
Then, Finn Balor shows up and does to Steen what Steen did to Cena or whatever, where he's like, "Do you remember this?" And then they'll show the footage of him beating Steen for the title and stuff, and being like, "Well, you know, you might be the king of the world, but here's me." And then they can wrestle with each other. They can have good matches. This is the advantage of NXT. They've already done it, so they'll do it again, and that'll get him over. And then, I don't know, this is the problem. Like, how does he? He's gonna end up in a fucking stable at some point. Like,
yeah,
he's gonna have a couple of minions, at the kind of thing.
More likely than any of that, John Cena and Kofi Kingston are the tag champs. Sheamus comes out and goes, "I'm challenging you for tag titles tonight. Come on out, wee cousin Fergal." And Fergal comes out in a similar sort of like Celtic rock shit, you know, theme. He's got a similar haircut. No body paint anymore. Vince McMahon's not into that. Couldn't figure out whether he was a vampire or not. And they're a tag team, and they stay that way for 10 years.
Brilliant. Could you imagine though the idea of him coming out in the full Paddy Wackery bullshit and then having this like intensely serious stare and a really complex technical wrestling match, and then after the ring going back again and be like
like Becky Lynch when she started in NXT.
Yeah, basically. You go, sir.
I don't know if this is fantasy booking or somewhere between like my idea of what could go well and like what probably will happen. But I like the idea of Sheamus having the Money in the Bank title or the briefcase thing, and he goes to cash in at some point and Balor's music hits and he comes out like at a pay-per-view. So I want it to be a big ticket one, probably a B pay-per-view.
Survivor Series.
Yeah, Survivor Series, the most degraded pay-per-view. Balor's music hits, comes out, they have a big stare down, because there's like while they're doing all this real life stuff of Fergal Devitt, Sheamus often said that they've never actually got to, like, they've been kind of contemporaries but have never been able to wrestle each other. I don't think they've even wrestled together. I think they've never wrestled on a card. Maybe
Sheamus would have been almost gone when Devitt was coming up,
and then work for like different promotions, and like just one going to Japan, one going to America. I think that would be an okay thing, and I think it's not unlikely.
I thought you were saying that Shane's going to come out with Money in the Bank briefcase, open it, and out comes Finn Balor.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we have to look forward to the fact that his music is already over. People already know what to do. Half of the crowd will get it, and the second half will just do it the second time. Mm-hmm. To put their hands up in the air when it goes, whoa. So that's cool. He will have a good debut. He will probably have some good, like, Jericho return-esque vignettes, being like, the beast within.
Yeah.
And then, like, dreadlocks or whatever. But yeah.
What if he comes out as, like, the Funkasaurus? Like, you remember?
That's the time to actually stop watching wrestling. The thing that's always joked about, but to just finally go, never watching WWE ever again.
Yeah,
that would be it. Like, I would never watch WWE or NXT anymore.
I don't know if they wouldn't.
I wouldn't let my children watch it. I'd put it on my fucking gravestone.
There is, I would say, about a 30% chance that he just debuts with like a fucking pirate gimmick or something, because Vince McMahon will just go, he don't look like a demon. He's got that kind of pirate face. You ever seen fucking Pirates, the 70s movie? He looks like a guy in that. You're a pirate now.
But do you know who is...
You come out with an anchor.
Do you know who is really good friends with Finn Balor? Triple H.
Yeah, they seem real pals.
Because they're both serious, and they both actually, non-kayfabe, don't drink very much. Despite your
claims. Bollocks. Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, maybe also, he doesn't drink like, now, back in the day.
So Triple H used to be... I think they're still like very good friends, friendly with Sheamus, because they were into like lifting.
Yeah.
So Triple H is still into lifting, but he's really into like functional fitness. So now he's quite like pally with Seth Rollins in the gym, and he'll be very good friends with Finn Balor as well. Yeah. They probably all hang around and do stuff with ropes and prowlers. Kipping pull-ups or whatever fuck you call them, or fuck your shoulders up.
They show Triple H showing Balor how to do his entrance on the third part of the NXT Balor documentary or whatever. He's like, no, you don't want to look at a camera like this, but you gotta get your head like this and stuff. And Triple H, in this Austin interview before WrestleMania, talked about how he really liked working with this kid, and he's like, real passion for the biz and stuff. So he's gonna give him a shot. He's not gonna let Vince paint him as a clown, literally, I think.
And then that could happen, yeah.
So obviously everybody has a chance of fizzling, and everybody kind of inevitably does fizzle at some point. But from a purely hedonistic perspective, we're going to get a debut, and we're going to get one pay-per-view match that will have Roy Keane, Juventus 99, written all over it for me.
I remember there was a rumor that Adrian Neville was going to get a Mighty Mouse gimmick. Did that ever happen?
I don't know what a Mighty Mouse gimmick is, but he did get a very slightly dumb gimmick. So is the Altitude Era a thing that you know about?
What?
Adrian Neville's the man that gravity forgot, so they very slightly tampered with his ring gear to make him look a bit spacey.
That's just Evan Bourne again, though.
Like, yeah, it is. Yeah.
Neville's problem is that he's got a very long face.
Give him a jumping fame.
Yeah. Like, how many years can you get out of, like, a fucking corkscrew squash thing?
Like, very legitimately, though, like, oh, he's got a six-pack. You're now the narcissist again. You're a fucking buff guy. You're an attractive man. You're going to come out and you're going to say your name and say you're attractive.
They'd have to make him shave off his terrible goatee if he wants to do that, though. Because he never will.
Yeah. Imagine if all he does, like every character in WWE, is, my name is Finn Balor. I've come here to fight or some shit. How many characters has just come out and say their name? That's what's going to happen. They're going to ruin him immediately. What you guys talk about is going to be a Roy Keane moment.
Debut against R-Truth.
It's going to be that, and it'll be a stupid gimmick, and Michael Cole will say he's from Bray, County Wicklow, Ireland. He's got a fighting spirit about him. His finishing move is the jump.
Bradshaw will say he's from Bray, County Wicklow, Ireland, and then he'll say, Katie Taylor, great boxer over there from Bray. They love rugby. Which is what he does. Only in pay-per-views, but he still does it. People have had good debuts.
No, they have.
Steen had a great debut.
Maybe I didn't see Steen. So, okay, maybe they have a bit of form. They're on a streak of one.
Fucking run.
The Wyatt family had a great run.
No, I don't think any of those did. Like, the Shield got over, but they were like...
You don't think the Wyatt family run when they came was good?
The same problem with both of them. What motivated the Shield? It was implied for a while.
That wasn't important until after the first month. I'm just trying to box off this debut first pay-per-view match, and if we can get through that, we'll figure out the rest of it.
But for me, the debut has to be, I'm here to do this. My name is Chris Jericho, and Raw is boring, but I'm not boring, and I interrupted The Rock. Good debut. It's funny. It's weird, and it sets up his character. The Shield coming out. We're the Shield. We might be CM Punk's henchmen sometimes.
That wasn't until after. The Shield's gimmick and their motivation for that first month is, whose side are they on? That's it. That's all it needs to be until after the first month.
But they have to be side eventually.
Eventually, and they didn't. But the Wyatts was a woman we never met was telling them what to do.
I never got that. Sister I thought Abigail they came out and they said, like, southern things.
Yeah, Cajun shit, man.
Magical
Creole shit.
Yeah, but what was, like, there has to be, they had to come out and said, hey, my magical Creole brain is telling me to, I don't know, clear you guys out of the bayou.
And Steen's, which has been his gimmick everywhere for the past 5 years, and an amazing one, is having big watery eyes, snuffling and saying, I need money to give my family. Which is a great gimmick.
I'll give them Steve. one, they're on a streak of one.
That was already developed.
Yeah, no, exactly. It was the one he's been doing in the indies since 2004.
So what's Balor's then?
But Balor will be whatever fucking botch they make of him.
Because it's a back end gimmick, the thing. Like, he becomes a demon to overcome and to intimidate and so forth. But it's not like, it's me, Finn Balor, and definitely going to win the title here, and sometimes like become a demon to make that more likely.
I think we'll get a halfway house where he's a bit more demon. They might paint like part of him all the time, even if they don't give him the weird dreadlock hat.
Okay.
Because I think that will just carry more water.
Well, this is where we land then. Carl says it's going to be an amazing debut. It'll be 100% Virgil Devitt, everything we like about him. Roy Keane,
I can't not believe that.
Like, Carl's more moderate. Carl say it'll be somewhere in between. It'll be a more tempered version.
No, I'm really excited. Just after the debut, it's probably gonna temper.
And my view is, it'll be, my name is Pirate Virgil. I'm here off the high sea to do some swashbuckling and swab the deck with the WWE universe or some bollocks like that. That's what it's gonna be.
That would be quite good.
So depressing.
That's what's going to be.
I have like a 10% suspicion that they're going to debut him as Virgil Devitt as well, because of this thing and who is Virgil Devitt and stuff. I think it's going to be down the line.
Sorry,
he's not going to be a pirate.
I nailed it. That's what's going to be. I'm sorry, we're done. That's it. I've cracked it.
Follow us on Twitter. If you have any ideas for Fergal Devitt's eventual gimmick, at us and WWE in the same tweet.
Us being at Jumping Nothing.
At Jumping Nothing. Check us out on SoundCloud, Jumping Nothing. Our website is jumpingnothing.com. On iTunes, the name of the podcast is Jumping Nothing. We are the podcast that comes out to the ring and says, this podcast's name is Jumping Nothing. What are you going to do about that? Anything else?
No, I think we said it all.
No, that's it. What a note to go out on.
Yo ho ho.